1077 RKR, the Rocker Morning Show with Mark Frankhouse, joined on the phone right now by the co-producer of one of rock and roll's most legendary concerts from the 80s, Live Aid. Welcome to the Rocker Morning Show, Harvey Goldsmith. Good morning, man.
Hi, Mark. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Doing fantastic, man. I can't believe it was almost 40 years ago to the day when Queen, yeah. U2, David Bowie, Elton John, Judas Priest, Led Zeppelin, The Who, Paul McCartney, Bob Dylan, Phil Collins, Sting, all these amazing artists and so many more took the stage for a pair of simultaneous benefit concerts that were held in Philadelphia and London to raise money for famine relief in Ethiopia that has gone down in history. Live Aid, man, what a concept. How did this first come together?
It was a result, very simply, of the previous October. For the first time ever, the BBC on the 6 o'clock main news, TV news, showed pictures of children and dying and the famine in Ethiopia, and everybody, it just hit everybody.
Yeah.
As a result of which, Bob Geldof got together with Midge and they created the record to the It's Christmas, which came out and was a massive hit and raised over £7 million. And then Bob went out to Africa and realised that that was just a spit in the ocean. So he came back to London and thought, I've got to do something more than this. I know, I'll call Harvey because I'd worked with the Boomtown Rats and I knew Bob well. Mm-hmm. And we'll, let's put on a concert. And that's really how it started. But for me, I was in the middle of mayhem because I was working with Roger Waters of the Pink Floyd, who'd split from the Pink Floyd and starting his solo career, which we were launching in Radio City in New York. And then I got a phone call from Wham's manager, Simon Napier Bell, who said, and I'd worked with Wham all their shows as yeah. well, but then he said, we're going to do a couple of shows in Hong Kong. And I said, great. And he said, then we're going to China, but I can't go to China, so can you please pick them up in Hong Kong and take them to China? And he put the phone down. Hang on, I'm going to China. This is 1980, you know, 4 or 5. I don't even know, you know, what, where, when, and how. And then Bob was kind of calling me saying, you know, we've got to do some more. We want to do this concert. I said, Bob, I'm going to New York, and then I better get from New York to Hong Kong and then to China. I don't know if I'm coming back, let alone what's going to happen.
Yeah.
No idea whatsoever. So that's why it was done in such a short space of time.
Man, so the whole planning, I mean, it was a matter of like months, wasn't it?
Weeks, 10 and
wow.
a half weeks.
Man, how arduous was that? Like trying to, because you've got to get all the planning in, you got to get the logistics in. How many people were working on this?
We had, I've always been fortunate to work with the best production people in the world.
Yeah.
My core team was about a dozen people. And that really, and each had their own kind of department and area to take care of, whether it was health and safety planning or, you know, sound, light, staging, whatever. And we worked with the best of the best, and I'm very fortunate to have this great team, which I still have today. And so it was literally just stopping life and getting on with it.
Wow.
I also had 3 shows with Bruce Springsteen playing at Wembley Stadium the following week.
Jeez.
I think about that too.
So
it was a pretty wild time. But it was, you know, I've always been a believer that if there's the will to do something, there's always a way that you can find. And if you look at the positive side of life, you can get it done. And there are too many people that kind of use the adage, you know, the answer's no, what's the question? And we just kind of bulldozed our way through it.
Wow. So where were you on the day of the event?
I was at Wembley. I had to stay at Wembley Stadium.
Yeah.
I sent one of my key production guys, Pete Smith, to Philadelphia to work with Larry Magid, who was running the show at the stadium in Philadelphia. And we were just, there were no computers, there were no mobile phones or anything like that.
They didn't
exist. So we were just on landlines and we had a telex machine.
Oh my gosh.
Spewed out a bit of tape. That was our communication. I was on the phones of every 15 minutes or so to make sure everything was going smooth. But I knew with 2 A teams, one in London and one in Philadelphia, it was going to be fine.
Wow.
And everybody kind of came to the table and said, we're going to make this work. And that's what they did.
That's cool. So do you, from your memory, were there any bands that you guys had approached to play that either couldn't play or turned the idea down?
Yeah, Stevie Wonder turned it down. Michael Jackson turned it down. Not everybody that we would like to have played, but pretty much everybody that we asked said yes.
Right. Man, that's wild. So how much money overall was raised by these concerts?
£140 million.
Jeez. Oh my gosh. And with just weeks of planning, that's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. And it still continues to come in.
Right.
We don't promote ourselves. We don't ask, we're not out there fundraising or anything like that. And we still on average 40 years later are giving out grants to the tune of about £7 million a year.
Wow, man, that is a lasting effect for 40 years later. That is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Man.
And now there's a musical out called Just for One Day, which has played in Toronto and is now back in London. And we've had the trust did a deal with the producers. We can't be the producers because we're trustees. But we've had £1 million from that already from that show. So it just continues to keep coming in. We thought once we'd done the show, it'll all be over in 3 months. 40 years later, we're still spending the money.
That's beautiful. That is so cool. Now, I take it you've seen the film Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
Now, when you watch that scene in the end when they recreate Live Aid and knowing how impactful that performance ended up being, how did it feel to see it come to life in a new way?
Yeah, it was good. It was kind of a bit of an emotional ride.
Yeah.
Because when Queen made that film, they never talked to me at all about it. And so they just did it from their perspective. That was okay, and it was a massive, massive success, as was their performance at the show itself, of course.
Yeah, did you kind of have that feeling going into it? Because I think a lot of it, I feel, is because of Queen's legacy and obviously of Freddie Mercury, but did you feel like that performance in particular was going to be one of the highlights of the day?
Yeah, I knew. I'd worked with Queen. I did a lot of all their shows in the UK, etc. And I was planning out the day, I said to Geldof, I'd like to put Queen on, because in the late afternoon of a big open air show, there's always a lull. People just get tired in the late afternoon, and then it picks up as normally the headliners go on.
True.
And I said, this is going to be a lull, and I want someone like Queen to just lift the audience up. Bob said, no, they're over the hill, they're finished, and let's find someone else and don't worry about it. And I just put my foot down. I said, no, Queen are going to do this slot.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I had to talk to Queen because we hadn't asked them yet. They just come off a tour and they were exhausted and they said, well, I don't know, we'll think about it. And then they saw the publicity about the show itself and they decided to do it. And, of course, they assumed they were going to headline the show. But I have to put them straight. But I said to them, this is your slot. And Freddie, bless him, realized the opportunity. The band rehearsed for 3 days just before the show.
Man.
And when they went out on stage, they absolutely nailed it.
Yeah. 20 years after that, you went on to co-produce Live 8. That happened in 2005, which was a similar kind of concept, correct?
It wasn't a fundraiser.
Right.
It really was to raise awareness, because the G8 conference of the 8 biggest countries in the world were meeting in Scotland, and we wanted to put Africa on the agenda because the countries in Africa were borrowing money, but the interest that they were having to pay back was so huge they couldn't afford to pay it back.
Right.
And we wanted the leaders of the world to put Africa on the agenda for the conference, which they'd never done before. So that was the reason for Live Aid.
Gotcha. How was the planning of that? Like, was it just as difficult as Live Aid, or do you think it was a little bit easier?
It was different because the trust, the same trustees are the trustees that started the Band Aid Trust in 1985.
Gotcha.
And we all got together 6 months or 8 months before and said, what do we do for, you know, for this year, for the anniversary? And we said, unless the artists want to do it, because times have changed, we're not going to do anything. We were going to release the CD of the show and the DVD of the show. And then what happened was this pressure started building up, and it was Bono from U2 and Madonna and Elton John that got together and pushed us into doing Live Aid.
Wow.
And that's what happened.
Man, well, you helped create one of the most iconic shows in history, and for an amazing cause, too. I love hearing how much in grants that are being pushed out every year because of Live Aid. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us and for the amazing show, man.
Thank you. Thank you.
We go way into depth about Live Aid and the follow-up Live 8, which took place 20 years after, on the 107.7 RKR app. Click the on-demand button to listen to the full interview.